This podcast is brought to you by eRadio. For more podcasts, check out our website on eradiosa.com or download the eRadio SA app from the Google Play Store. Enjoy.
It's time for Medical Monday with ophthalmologist Dr. Dylan Joseph, and today we're talking about something really interesting, something that sounds a bit like a foreign vegetable. It's called keratoconus. Dr. Dylan, how's it?
Hey, Jan, you pronounced that perfectly. Well done. I don't hear anything vegetable about that pronunciation, so good one.
Thank you. I was practicing all night.
You've got it right.
Thank you. I'm pleased to hear that. You know, you mentioned it a few times in our past conversations. What exactly is it?
Yeah, keratoconus is a genetic entity, so it's a genetic disorder. What is a genetic disorder? It means it's something inherited from mom and dad and passed down in your genes. It's not to say that if your mom and dad have keratoconus that you're going to inherit it, but we just need to know that it is a genetic disorder. But what keratoconus is basically a problem with the cornea. Now, we've talked about the cornea, the front clear dome of the eye, where these bonds in the cornea that are collagen bonds become weaker and weaker and weaker. And eventually, these collagen bonds start shifting apart from each other. And remember, we talked about the cornea being shaped, for want of a better word, like a soccer ball. In keratoconus, this cornea eventually becomes shaped like a warped rugby ball. So you can imagine Mornay Steyn against the British and Irish Lions in that last game and giving it a proper wallop 12 years ago and recently, and disfiguring that rugby ball as it's flying through the rugby posts. The shape that it takes on, or warping of the ball, of the rugby ball of the cornea, has a profound impact on your quality of vision. But essentially, it's a progressive disorder. It is usually bilateral, meaning both eyes, and it is genetic. So that's our gross definition of keratoconus, but it's a disorder of the front of the eye, the cornea, with progressive worsening of vision because the bonds in the cornea start weakening.
Wow. So I was going to ask you now the next question, how do I get it? But obviously you said it's genetic, so it comes from your parents and your grandparents.
Well, exactly. So it's in the genes. It's family related, but there are a number of processes that one goes through that basically trigger it. So some people, believe that the keratoconus, if you've got the gene, you're going to start expressing it, which is usually in your teenage years or early 20s. But what we see, there's a lot of really good publications out there, and a professor of ophthalmology at the Rothschild University in Paris is also a mathematician. His name's Damien Gatinal. So he's done a lot of good research on keratoconus, the origins, what precipitates it. And his phrase, in inverted commas, is no rub, no cone. So basically, the cone is that warped shape of the eye, the front of the eye. But his hypothesis, which has now been widely accepted, is that people who rub their eyes in their early years or as teenagers in their early 20s, what you're doing is you're slowly breaking down those bonds. So it's scaffolding that's holding this cornea together. And every time you're rubbing, and rubbing is classically with a finger, so it's bone on soft tissue, with the palm of your hand, which is bone on soft tissue, or your knuckle, which is bone on soft tissue. And either of those is causing a breakdown of those bonds. They've actually done dynamic MRI scans, so dynamic meaning live, so magnetic resonance imaging scans of a person rubbing their eye, and you'll be actually quite frightened to see how disfigured or disformed the eye becomes when you apply that sort of pressure to it.
Wow.
Some interesting literature as well, where people present with keratoconus changes just in one eye, and they say, no, but they don't rub at all. You ask about their sleeping habits. And people who sleep on their stomachs, and particularly on just the right side or just the left side, You won't believe it, but data is showing that the compression from the pillow and that rubbing of the pillow against your eye whilst you're asleep can basically manifest these keratoconus changes or the breaking down in the bonds. So all you need then is the gene. And if you're doing something to stimulate the breakdown of those bonds, being rubbing of the eye or you're basically sleeping on the one eye, you can actually break down these bonds slowly. So it's something that you're unaware of as a child or as a teenager. But in the history taking as well, it's very important to ask children whether they have a family member with it, a brother, a sister, an aunt, an uncle, a mom or dad. But you know, also to ask about an atopic history. Do you know what atopy is?
No.
Okay, atopy is basically allergies. So okay. You're a highly allergic person. So rhinitis, inflammation of the nose, inflammation of the sinuses, a history of eczema, rubbing the arms, itchy skin. Kids with eczema typically get patterns in their elbow flexure and behind the knees. Hay fever, kids that rub their eyes and their nose vigorously as children. One's got to be very, very careful about that and treat it as soon as you pick it up.
That's so interesting. So would you say, Dr. Joseph, that those are the main factors that actually worsen it, the way you sleep and then rubbing your eyes?
Absolutely. And I've seen it time and time again. You know, and Damien Gatineau, who I spoke about earlier, has written many publications on it. And I tell my patients, no rub, no cone. And of 99 out of 100 patients that I interview who end up having keratoconus, they have either a past or a present history of rubbing the eye. And that's out either because the eye is uncomfortable, so there's a stimulus, there's a physical stimulus to rub the eye to try and make it feel better, or because it's become habitual. So it's like smoking. You know, people smoke often because it becomes a habit and a formed habit. So rubbing the eye has a very similar effect. You rub the eye because it psychologically makes you feel better as well. So those two we need to try and differentiate between and then try and break the habit. And very importantly, if you're diagnosing keratoconus early, and if there is an atopic history, or if a child has asthma, dermatitis, eczema, to aggressively treat that along with the eye symptoms and get them to stop rubbing. And often, if you get them to stop rubbing, like Damien Gatineau says, no rub, no cone, you're not going to necessarily worsen the progression of this disorder, unless it's already beyond the point of no return, and then it keeps getting worse and worse. So those are your primary aspects of an important history that you need to take and to treat aggressively if you see that.
Musa, I'm guilty of rubbing, you know, with my allergies. So that's very, very interesting to know. I think many people, allergies, weird. Absolutely.
Yeah, 100%. And sometimes it's subtle. And we've got a lot of new diagnostic tools that, you know, previously you look at an eye and on our scans, it looks okay, or there might be some suspicious points on it. But another chap called Dan Reinstein, who 15, 20 years ago already started doing publications on the top 50,000ths of a millimeter of your cornea, can you believe it?
Sure.
Called the epithelium. And that's basically a skin layer that covers our bodies. And we've also got that same little epithelial layer that covers the cornea. And we have diagnostic machines that just look at that. And that in combination with some telltale signs on our other scans is a giveaway, a diagnostic giveaway of keratoconus. And we can now pick it up earlier and we can start treating it earlier.
So let's say I have keratoconus now, doctor. How does it affect my vision?
So early stages of keratoconus may not affect your vision. You may not notice any change. Sometimes the earliest form of change is people start noticing a deterioration in their vision quality with their spectacles or with their contact lenses. So they may find that they become more short-sighted within half a year, 1 year, quite rapidly, or they may develop more astigmatism. So you'll remember astigmatism from many weeks ago. We talked about it. It's the shape of the eye like a rugby ball. So that can become a first telltale sign that, oopsie, hang on, something is changing too quickly in the visual system. What is it? So that may be the first signs, but it can still be corrected with a spectacle or a contact lens to the point that a person doesn't know they have keratoconus. But if they're carrying on with their habits, their bad habits of rubbing or their sleeping habits, which they can do nothing about, you can't blame yourself. But it's important that it gets picked up primarily, either with an optometrist or then with a very comprehensive ophthalmic examination. So it can either do nothing or it can start warping your cornea. And when it warps your cornea, you start developing symptoms like ghosting, glare, halos, double vision. Things just don't seem very clear. And your spectacles and your contact lenses cannot correct your vision then anymore. So you start losing lines of vision. That's when keratoconus is starting to get out of hand.
So, Doc, can it be treated with glasses or contact lenses in general?
Early stages, yes. As long as we can stabilize the disease or we address the inciting problems like the rubbing and the eczema, the contact dermatitis history, change sleeping habits. And then we've got to follow those scans up very closely, potentially if they're young people, 2 to 3 months, maybe 3 to 6 monthly then. And then if we're seeing that the scans are stable, then we can monitor these patients on an ongoing basis without performing intervention. But if we see any changes or if we already know that there's loss of vision, albeit a line or two lines, we rather then be a little more aggressive and discuss some treatment options as opposed to just keeping you in specs and contacts.
That's exactly what we're going to talk about now as well. What are the treatment options for this condition?
Your earliest treatment options and very effective is something called cross-linking, corneal collagen cross-linking. So there's two ways of doing this, two schools of thoughts, by removing that thin layer of cells called the epithelium. And the second school of thought, which we did a lot of overseas in the Wellington Eye Clinic, and is called epithelium on. And this latter procedure tends to be far more comfortable for the patient and minimally invasive and carries overall less potential complications. But in some literature studies shows that it's not necessarily as effective. Either in our studies that we did, our cross-linking with epithelium on showed very effective results. Now, what is cross-linking? So remember I told you the cornea is made up of architectural bonds. It's collagen. So what we do is we soak that cornea in a solution called riboflavin, which is essentially vitamin B2. And after soaking it in riboflavin, we then expose it to ultraviolet light. So the ultraviolet light stimulates the riboflavin and it releases something called free radicals. And those free radicals then allow a stiffening of the collagen bonds of the cornea. Now, interesting studies as well show that this ongoing process, while we are stiffening the bonds, needs oxygen. So oxygen has become a very important part of the therapy of corneal cross-linking. So we've got to allow for the reuptake of oxygen with specific techniques while we're cross-linking into the tissue so that there's always oxygen available for the riboflavin and the ultraviolet to carry out its cross-linking, so to speak. So cross-linking is essentially exactly that. It's linking the bonds between the collagen fibers so that they become stiff again, so that they cannot further break down. Obviously, if someone continues to rub their eyes and we can't break the habits, you can negate the effect of the cross-linking. But we do cross-linking to stabilize the corneas. And often in cases that are very subtle, where we don't want to lose lines of vision, we can consider this. In cases that are advancing, we'll consider cross-linking to try and stabilize the cornea. And moreover, we can now combine laser vision correction, which was previously thought to be a no-no with keratoconus. We can actually reshape the cornea, not to get you out of spectacles or contact lenses, but to reshape it, to take it from a warped rugby ball to more like a normal looking rugby ball, and then cross-link it afterwards so that you can better fit a contact lens or improve your quality of vision with spectacles. So whatever we do with keratoconus when it's really bad, we can't promise patients spectacle independence or contact lens independence. We try and get them to a point where we can stabilize their cornea so that and change the shape potentially with laser so that they can get better vision out of contact lenses and out of spectacles. In really severe cases, you can do something called intacs. So intacs is inserting basically a polymethyl methacrylate, PMMA, rings into the cornea, and we've got a femtosecond laser that can create an ultra-thin pocket for you to put this ring in, which basically flattens this bulge in the cornea. And they can be very, very effective. And you can then, once that's done, you can combine this with laser to try and reshape it or resurface a little bit and cross-link it later. So there's a number of things that one can do with keratoconus to try and improve the overall functionality of the patient, the quality of life, and sometimes the quality of vision. And then, of course, you know, there are cases of keratoconus where they are beyond intacs, they are beyond cross-linking, they are beyond the ability to perform laser vision resurfacing. And unfortunately, they end up in either partial thickness corneal transplants, where you can transplant just the front part of the cornea, leaving the ultra-thin 11 microns of the backside of the cornea intact. You can also do a full-thickness corneal transplant. But when we go that route, it's really end-case scenario. You know, there's often scarring. The corneas are very thin. The person's quality of vision is at basically hand movements, which means all you can see is a hand in front of your face. Then we know that by doing a corneal transplant, you're in for a long road of recovery, often a year to 2 years before we can start trying to rehabilitate the vision. So there's a lot we can do with keratoconus. It just depends on the staging of the keratoconus, your age as well, and how aggressive we want to be to stabilize it.
Wow, Doc, as always, very, very insightful. I now believe you have some exciting news regarding treatment in your practice. Do you care to share?
Aha. So, yeah, until now we've practiced laser vision correction and lens surgery, so cataract and refractive surgery. While I did my fellowship in Ireland, we did a lot of keratoconus as well. But coming back to the garden route, interestingly, with a the population didn't lend itself towards keratoconus, but we've seen more and more and more people moving down to the garden route. And of course, with more people moving down, it means younger families moving down, with teenagers, with young people in their 20s. So we're starting to see more keratoconus filter through, so to speak. And so what we're starting to do is introduce keratoconus management in our practice, so offering sort of new state-of-the-art cross-linking methods that we can combine with laser vision correction. We already have that facility available, or laser vision correction and cross-linking together. We've got a scleral lens expert. This is another management option that I didn't mention earlier, Ion, that comes down from Johannesburg. She's just dedicated to fitting scleral lenses, and scleral lenses are for patients that have got such warped corneas and disfigured corneas that they basically pre-transplant status. So
sure,
it's a last resort before transplant, but miraculously you can get really good quality of vision in a lot of cases with a scleral lens. So we offer that in the clinic now, and we are offering the service of cross-linking, possibly combined with laser vision correction to try and improve overall shape of the cornea, quality of vision, remembering not to get spectacle independent, but just to try and improve vision to improve quality of life. So a very exciting new addition to the clinic.
It's amazing to have all this incredible stuff right on our doorstep, eh? You would always think it's up there in a city.
Absolutely, absolutely. We bring the city here.
Yeah, I mean, you have to. The city's coming here anyway.
Well, it is the semigration capital of the country at the moment, isn't it?
It is, absolutely.
The garden route.
Yeah, no, it totally is. The estate agents will vouch for that as well. Dr. Joseph, thank you so much, as always, for sharing your knowledge with us. And how do we get in touch with you?
We're in Knysna, locally based here. Our telephone number is 044-150-0085, and Mariska can take your calls. We have a website too. It's www.drdylanjoseph.com, with our contact details on the website there as well. We have a number of social media platforms, including Facebook and Instagram. So go and like our Facebook and Instagram page. We post a lot of great content 2 to 3 times a day. We've got a fully dedicated digital media expert now doing that for us, and sure. Trying to just provide education and good content so people can learn from various eye conditions. And yeah, we've also started a YouTube channel now as well. So a lot of our content, including this, these live streams, gets put up onto the YouTube channel. We've got educational YouTube videos to help people understand certain concepts. So yeah, there we go. And we look forward to helping you out with vision correction or keratoconus.
Excellent. Doc, thank you so much. By the way, you have a great person in charge there of your social media. Her name is it Melanie?
Thank you. Yes, it's Melanie. That's right. She's a French girl, but she's got some serious French flair for the camera and for putting some amazing media together.
Big shout out to Melanie. She's doing a fine job. A fine job. Doc,
thank you, sir.
Doc, thank you so much. And until next week, Monday, for more Medical Monday.
Great pleasure. Excellent. Looking forward to it, Ian. Have a good one.
This podcast was brought to you by eRadio. For more podcasts, check out our website on eradiosa.com or through the eRadio SA app from the Google Play Store.